Welcome to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac, a show about how to break through obstacles that may be holding you back in life or business. And now your host of Breakthrough Thinking, certified master practitioner in neuro-linguistic programming, business consultant, and CPA, Dave Isaac.
Live from the 1010 Studios in Phoenix, Arizona, you are listening to Breakthrough Thinking. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm Dave Isaac, the host of Breakthrough Thinking. And if it is the first Tuesday of the month, it must be the bottom line with Mitch Spean. Mitch, how are you?
I'm doing fine. And yes, it's the first Tuesday. So
it is the first Tuesday, August 2nd. I rarely talk to you. It's so nice to see you.
It's been a while.
How long? Since this morning?
Yes.
Yes. I talk to you a lot, actually, because you are one of the best two CPAs I know in the country.
Absolutely.
Did I say that right?
Yes.
One of the best two.
Exactly.
Who's the other one?
You.
Oh, I think
okay,
both
thank
ones.
You so much, because our special guest just gave me a compliment and in studio. Mitch, you want to introduce our in-studio guest for today?
Well, today we've got somebody who's going to talk a little bit about retirement plans and some of the vehicles that we can use. It's Susan Hayek, and welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Rich. Appreciate it.
Any relation to Selma?
No, I wish.
Oh.
However, when I did live in Miami, I did use my last name and first initial quite a bit to get good reservations at restaurants.
You know who you sound like? I just noticed this when we're on the air. Kurt, who does you think she sounds like, our producer, Kurt? It's a famous movie. She was in many movies. One is one of my favorite movies of all time, written by Billy Crystal. I just love his stuff. It's a movie called Forget Paris. Did you ever see it? The wife of not Deborah Winger. There's the other girl. You sound like her.
Forget Paris.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen that movie.
It's a fantastic movie, right?
It's time to rent it. So.
Yeah.
I will have to write it down.
You sound just like that girl. It's incredible. I forgot her name, though.
Who is it?
Kurt, mate, do you have a computer there, Kurt? Okay, he's going to check it.
Kurt's going to look it up. Google.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a Google. She's very well known. She's been in a lot of movies. Woody Allen movies, too. So it was, you'll recognize her once we play a tape of her.
Okay.
I don't know if you'll recognize her name, because I don't even know her name, but you sound just like her. Congratulations for sounding like her.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
So this is great. You're a pension consultant. People need to start thinking about that stuff, and it looks like you have great credentials, Series 7 and 63 license. Can you tell us the difference? Is that the...
Well, actually, one is the federal licensing, actually national, with FINRA, and the other is the state license. That's
oh.
where you would take the different tests to get nationally licensed to sell securities and then state licensed for securities.
You must be smart.
Well, actually, I won't boast too much, but... They are difficult tests to take, especially at this point in time. And I will tell you, I am a non-producing securities licensed person. I don't actively sell right now. I just hold the licenses so that I have the information and I'm able to actually work with other financial advisors to help them in the pension consulting area.
Which is so critical to understand how pensions work, because it's a pretty complex field. I mean, Mitch, I'm not a specialist at all in that area, and I don't want to be.
I use specialists like Susan because I can't be an expert in everything.
Well, you can't. Your expertise is, as a certified public accountant, your expertise is in the tax law, the tax code, and even though retirement plans are part of the tax code, Internal Revenue Code, there are different it's almost like a subset in that respect, and depending upon what you're practicing in, I strongly urge, and I'm so... thankful that you decided to have me on the show here today, especially in August, because people need to start thinking if they're thinking about establishing a retirement plan or if they're thinking about contributing to a retirement plan. And I'm talking qualified retirement plans, because there is a difference between qualified and non-qualified plans. They should start thinking about that now, because there are some plans that do need to be established before the end of a plan year, which is typically a calendar year, and there are some plans that need to be established prior to then. So depending upon the type of plan you want to open up or utilize for tax deference, now's a good time to start thinking about that.
So this is good. This is a good starting point, I believe, is to describe the difference between a qualified and a non-qualified plan.
Well, basically, it qualifies as a qualified plan under ERISA or the retirement IRC code 401A. that would mean that it's qualified from a tax perspective to actually be operated to allow for tax deference, either at the employee level, which is your typical 401k, where I'm doing some type of contributions, or at the employer level, where an employer is making some type of a contribution, and they're taking that as a deduction. And these plans can be established by individuals. Let's say I'm a sole proprietor, I'm working by myself, or they can be established by people who run companies as well. So the plan sponsor can be an individual, or it can be a corporation.
So what would be an example of a non-qualified plan?
Typically, those are set up using insurance options, or it would be a plan that is set up at which you're deferring income for a further place in time, but it doesn't qualify under the IRC code 401A.
All righty. Mitch, does that sound right?
Yes.
Okay, good. I wanted to see if Mitch was still there. He is still there.
Yeah. And usually what you'll have – oh, sorry about that.
What'd you do?
I got a little too close, I think, to the microphone.
Yeah, but
I'm not used to this big microphone.
Yeah,
here.
But I like how you did that. That was really good.
Usually what will happen is you've got insurance professionals and financial professionals that specialize strictly in the non-qualified arena. And those are usually utilized to assist what we call in the industry highly compensated employees – or employees that you have at which they want to defer certain types of income for a future date and time.
Now, a lot of people will recognize an IRA or a SEP, mm-hmm. qualified or non-qualified?
That's really a good question. Individual retirement accounts are not considered qualified plans from the standpoint of regulations that might govern the capability for someone to attach themselves to your assets. You know, the big rule of thumb is an individual retirement account is individual in scope. If you have assets that are in a qualified retirement plan, they are not able to be attached to lawsuits, bankruptcies, and other legal entities that might want to try to attach themselves to individual assets because they're considered qualified assets. A good example is O.J. Simpson. When he was convicted in his civil suit of crime and he was sentenced to have money paid to, I think it was the Goldman family,
yeah.
What they said is he didn't have any money to attach it to, yet he was still living in a very nice lifestyle, and that's because his pension from the NFL, his qualified retirement plan from the NFL, you can't attach yourselves to those types of assets. So he would get that money. Now, legally, and I don't provide legal advice. I'm not an attorney, so you would want to check this out with your attorney to find out whether or not this is qualifiable.
And neither are we.
Exactly. Yes.
That's
probably
right.
A good disclaimer at this point in time, and probably also a good time to talk about the fact that you'd always want to check that out with an attorney. I would always want to check out certain tax deference and things like that with a CPA, such as the two of you, from that perspective. But you know, after he got the money, how he then would pay them back, but they couldn't attach themselves to his qualified retirement assets.
So that's an interesting point. Now, speaking of OJ, I mean, here's a guy, not to get off the topic, however, I mean, gets out of the murder charge, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, well,
yes.
The jury said he was innocent, so, he trusts.
Well, innocent and not guilty are
yeah.
two separate things.
Okay, good. You're
true.
Absolutely right. And then he loses, but he has a qualified plan, so he's still doing okay. And then, for some reason, Kurt, you chime in on this one, is like, he goes to Las Vegas, takes a gun, and tries to steal his stuff back, and now he's in jail.
Absolutely.
It's like, is he... I mean,
what's he thinking?
Yeah, well,
he's
I don't
not.
Get it. I
he's
just,
not.
That was very strange, that whole thing.
I will totally agree with you, and don't even recall what I was watching not that long ago, but they talked to the judge in Las Vegas that sentenced him for the crime that he committed there, you know, at gunpoint trying to hold up the gentleman to get back some of the sports paraphernalia that he said was his and was stolen.
He's stealing his own stuff back.
He's stealing his own stuff back.
And with a gun.
They asked her, they said, do you think you were too hard on OJ? She goes, I don't think so at all. I think I went ahead and gave the sentence that fit the crime, is what she said.
Wow.
I thought it was pretty interesting.
I would have appealed it saying, wait a minute, you were mad at that Marsha Clark didn't win. Remember that? Did you watch that stuff?
Oh, everybody did.
Oh, God.
People were fascinated.
You could not.
You couldn't go anywhere
the Dream Team, right?
It.
Melvin Belli.
You could not.
I mean,
turn on the TV without getting something that.
You would go to lunch. It would be on. I mean, and, you know, now let's say you go to lunch in a sports bar or whatever, and you've got all the games on, right? You would go to lunch, and the O.J. Simpson trial would be on at least one of those televisions.
That was good TV, wasn't it?
It was interesting TV.
But the Dream Team.
Are we not talking about Philadelphia Eagles?
That's right. No, we're not.
Like I said, we're getting way off topic here.
All right. So what's your opinion?
Back to qualified retirement plans.
Yeah. How about Kevin Kolb? Is he going to be a good quarterback? I'm just kidding. Okay.
Well, you know, according to what I've been hearing, yes. And hopefully that will clinch the deal with Larry Fitzgerald.
Wow. You do know your football. How do you know your football?
I'm from St. Louis.
Oh, are you a Kurt Warner fan?
Very much so. Absolutely.
Wow. So, Kurt, did you find out the woman's voice?
Yes. The movie you mentioned is, you know, Forget Paris from 1995. But the actress you're referring to is Cynthia Stevenson.
Is that right?
Yeah.
You
she used to be
her.
On Hope and Glory. She's one of those actresses that if you saw her, mm-hmm. you'd go, oh, yeah.
You'd
I've
recognize
seen that
her.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Very, she's one of those good character actresses. And now that I know who you're talking about,
she sounds
you
like
really
it.
Do sound a lot like
yes,
her.
I'm
Boy,
so
I'll
excited.
Tell you, man. You could pilfer some voiceover work from her real easy.
You could.
I'll have
you
to
could.
Look her up.
Yeah.
See, just like
yeah.
you said that.
Yes.
That's how she would say
That's
it.
That's how she would say it.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, you guys talk.
Okay, so
I want to listen.
Where's the sound clip?
I could get one if you really
let's
want
to. Let's get a sound clip. Can you do it? Oh,
well,
you were.
Yeah,
you
I
were
could, you know.
Oh, I thought you were serious.
I need to be here, you know.
Oh, I forgot. Maybe Amber. Okay, well, we'll see. Anyway, let's get back to the topic of O.J.
Yes.
Simpson. No. Okay, so top types of qualified plans
yes.
for individuals and companies. Do you want to go over some? I mean, there's 401Ks. So that's probably the most popular. People recognize that. Maybe they don't understand it.
Well, it, you know, 401K has almost become synonymous with retirement plans, similar to a tissue becoming a Kleenex,
yeah.
for lack of a better
Or
comparison.
Xerox becoming a copy machine.
Exactly, exactly.
Or radio host Dave Isaac.
Yeah, when you talk to people about, do you have a retirement plan at work, they always go, oh, no, I don't have a 401K. You're like, well, just because you don't have a 401K doesn't mean you don't have a qualified retirement plan or retirement plan at work and vice versa. However, what you saw is prior to probably the 1980s, the traditional retirement plan for an employee was called a defined benefit plan. That's how people knew them, or they called them the pension plan. And a defined benefit plan is a plan in which there is a defined benefit that an employee is going to be paid at some time in the future, usually their retirement date, and that's predetermined in the plan. It might be age 62. It's gotten a little older. It was 65. Now you're talking 67, and I keep hearing 70 now from people. And that's when they talk about Social Security. You know, the retirement age is rapidly going up because we're living longer. You know, our life expectancies are a lot longer than they were 20, even 10 years ago. However, in a defined benefit plan, again, the plan is funded from the standpoint of some date in the future, and I'll use myself as an example. Let's say I want to retire when I'm 65, and let's say that that's going to be 20-some years from now. Let's say it's 25 years from now. So there's 25 years that I have to accumulate that money. And utilizing, as you all know, the time value of money, the longer you've got, I could put money in a plan. You've seen those examples where they're like, if you put $10 in an account starting at age 20 for the next 10 years of your life, $10 every month, you're going to have that. You contributed X number of dollars, and then you wait for 20 years, and it accumulated its interest at 10%. Or if I wait 15 years, and then I have to put in something like sometimes it's 10, 20 times more money just to get the same amount of money. So you're using the time value of money from an accumulation perspective. So in the defined benefit, what happens is typically the employer was putting in contributions for me so that when I met that retirement age, let's say it was 65, I would have enough money based on my life expectancy from 65 to when the actuarial tables say I'm going to die. I'll have enough money to sustain me. Usually those benefits were somewhere providing you anywhere from 50 to 65, sometimes even more percent of your final year of income. So if I was making $50,000 a year and I had a plan that was going to go ahead and pay me an 80%, you've heard 80% replacement ratio or an 80% of my last final year salary. So I have a plan that was going to pay me $40,000 a year, and my life expectancy is 20 years. It's going to pay me $40,000 a year for the next 20 years of my life because I'm going to die when I'm 85. That's what the tables say.
What if you turn 86?
Well, I keep getting paid. See, that's where it gets interesting because based on life expectancies, some of those people are going to pass away before they get that full benefit that was funded for them. remember, it's going to keep earning interest. The money is going to keep earning interest as I'm paying it out. Or some people might live a little bit longer, but usually the averages would average out in that respect.
Wow. That's
But think about it. Actuaries are just so fun, and they do –
But they are, and they're necessary in a defined benefit
absolutely.
World. And you all have you guys ever heard, have you heard of cash balance plans? Those are like the new defined benefit plans.
Really?
IBM was the first company that actually moved into the cash balance world, the first large big company. They converted their defined benefit plan, traditional defined benefit plan, into a cash balance plan several years ago. And what it does is it's like a defined benefit plan that acts like a defined contribution plan, which is a plan in which, like a profit-sharing plan, I get a statement every year. It tells me how much money I have. It shows me what my beginning balance was, what I earned during the year, what my contribution was, and then what my ending balance is. And it's a tangible amount to me. Whereas usually in a defined benefit plan, I'm getting something that's telling me the present value of your accrued benefit that you're going to get at 65, which to some people, 25-year-olds, like, are you kidding me? That's 40 years from now. And it looks very small because of the time value of money.
That is fascinating. You know your stuff.
That's fascinating.
No, really, it
Actually,
is.
I know a lot of very good actuaries.
Wow, you do. But this is
very
good. And we're about to take a break. And when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion with Susan Hayek. A pension consultant, and of course, this is The Bottom Line with Mitch Spean, and we'll be right back.
At Birenbaum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is The Bottom Line, starring Mitch Spean, one of the two best CPAs I know.
And you're one of the two best that I know.
That equals four. Oh, that means we're not so up on math.
And okay. Both of you are the two best CPAs I know.
Oh, that was nice. How many CPAs do you know? We hear music.
No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, two. Now, you were talking about lifespan actuaries and all that.
Yep.
Would this seem to cut the lifespan of someone? So let's say let's use myself as an example. Let's say this girl came up to me and said, if I was married to you, I put poison in your coffee. And if I was married to you, I would drink it. Okay. Anyway, that's my...
Okay.
Does it have any...
Interesting example.
Okay. Is that good? That was good, right, Mitch?
I'm waiting for the punchline.
Okay. Yeah, no, it was coffee, not punch. Okay. Punch wasn't it. It was the coffee. I think it would work with punch, too, though. All right. Anyway, we were talking about qualified plans.
Sure.
Cash balance plan you ended up with. You want to elaborate a little bit more on that?
Sure. Like I said, in the recent years, they've become very popular in our, especially with your smaller employers, your individuals and your smaller employers. sole proprietors, et cetera, they're easier to set up. They're easier to understand, especially from an employee education perspective, than, as I was explaining earlier, the defined benefit, where you're getting a statement that says your present value of your accrued benefit is $1,600, and you're thinking, but I've worked here for 4 or 5 years. I don't understand why I've only got $1,600 in my account. That's not the case. In a cash balance account, similar to what you might see in a profit-sharing plan or a 401k plan, if you're used to that, you have a statement that's going to tell you at the beginning of the year there was X number of dollars in the plan, there was a contribution made on your behalf of a certain number of dollars. That's typically based upon your salary and the number of years that you've worked there. In a cash balance plan, it is actually based on your age and how many years you have until retirement. So it uses that defined benefit component as opposed to just a straight percentage of your salary, which is typical in a defined contribution plan, a profit sharing plan. And then what it'll do is it allows an employer to pair that up with a profit sharing plan potentially to get maximum contributions and maximum deference of taxes, not only for them, but also for the company and for the employees that work for them.
Wow, that sounds like a nice plan.
Yeah, I know. I wish I had one.
Wow, it's not too late.
No, it's not. You are right. It is not too late.
See?
That's why we're talking about retirement plans today.
Exactly. Now, defined contribution plan.
Yes.
What would that be?
Well, typically a defined contribution plan means that what happens with your plan is what you're going to get at retirement date is based on the defined contributions that have been going into the plan year in and year out. There's not a certain amount of money where you say, okay, Susan, I need to have $1 million in the plan when you turn 65, so I bring that back to present value in a defined benefit plan and calculate how much money I need to put in each year. In a defined contribution plan, I say, I'm going to put in 10% of your income every year, and then whatever that money earns or, God forbid, loses over the course of the span that the money is in the plan, when I reach retirement age, whatever's in that plan based on those contributions and what it earned, that's what I'm going to get on my retirement date. That's all the money that's in the plan.
Now, you've heard in recent times, the last couple of years, that a lot of people had 401k plans or have them, but they sustained big losses. Tell us a little bit more about that. I think that's tragic. However, did some of them catch back up, or are they permanent losses, as it appears, or what's the story on that?
Well, any financial advisor and tax advisor, such as yourselves, from a CPA perspective, will tell you that in an investment environment, the only hard loss for you is if you actually sold.
Right.
If the money is there, and especially in a qualified retirement plan, there is really no such thing as gains and losses, because what's happening is you're putting the money into the plan, you're getting that tax deference of that money. So in a 401k plan, I'll use that as an example. If I defer $10,000 of my income, I'm able to deduct that from my earned income. So I've reduced my earned income by $10,000, and that'll show up on my W-2, and it'll show up on my tax form. And so what will happen is that money stays tax deferred until I actually take it out of the plan. So in a sense, gains and losses are not really recognized in that plan, because I'm not taxed on it like I would if I had a stock outside of a qualified plan.
Well, if you pull out, if it goes down to 8,000, you pull 8,000, you're going to be taxed on 8,000.
You're going to be taxed on whatever comes out.
Yeah.
Right. But in the meantime, you got the advantage of the $10,000 deduction.
Yeah. So.
That's correct.
And that's a very good point. I was referring to something different, but I'm glad you brought that up, because from a tax point of view, that's important to know. I was looking at more, from the question point of view, is the tragedy of if someone's already in their 70s relying on a 401k and they just lost half their value, and of course there's, I think, minimum distribution requirements.
Correct.
You know, they don't have much to pull from anymore. And from that perspective, more of a economic, not a tax perspective, what have you seen? I mean, it sounds horrible in terms of how does someone 75, 80 try to recoup the loss, or the loss of value, I should maybe describe it as. What have you seen with that?
Well, and there again, you've probably, and I know you've seen it too, because it's been in the publications, the newspapers, it's been on television. Unfortunately, in 2008, when we did see the dramatic downfall of the stock market, and there were a lot of losses that incurred in a lot of the retirement plans, that was about 6 or 7 years after funds called target date funds became very popular. So people that were 1 or 2 years away from retirement had their monies invested in what was called the 2010 fund. Mm. Like there's a 2010 fund, a 2015 fund, a 2020 fund. A lot of investment mutual fund companies, as well as, I mean, they've all got these target date funds for retirement plans. And there were people that lost a significant amount of their principal in the plan from the standpoint of, in 2008, they thought they were going to retire in a year, but they maybe lost anywhere from 20. If you were 100% stocks or you were very heavily in stocks, you might have lost anywhere from 20 to 40% of your money. And so to make that up, what you've got to do then is either you're staying in investments that will make that up, or what you're doing is then you're transferring that money into other investments that you're hoping will sustain or keep the principal value of whatever it was you had left after that significant downfall in the market.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And nevertheless, it's very difficult right. for a lot of people.
But well, are you limited at that point once you're in that investment, are you limited in what you can do to try and assist in bringing back the value of an account?
Well, you bring up an interesting point, because depending upon the type of plan that an employer, and remember, an employer can be an individual. You know, I could be a sole proprietor, I could be a freelance writer, and so I open up my own plan just for me. So an employer establishes the plans for the benefit of their employee. But typically in a defined benefit plan or in a profit-sharing plan in which the employer is putting in 100% of the contributions, usually there's an investment committee or an outside investment advisor that's managing that portfolio of money in a pooled money environment. In a 401k environment, what has transcribed is because there's employee money, you know, and I'll use myself as an example because I do have a 401k plan, I defer money and I put it in. I, in a sense, self-direct that. So there's a lot of plans out there. There's a lot of vendors that offer platforms, a variety of different mutual fund choices, different investment choices that allow me to pick and choose. And most of those 401k plans are set up where I can make those investment choices technically in a lot of plans on a daily basis. Some, they do limit it to a quarterly. Others, I can do it on a daily basis via a website by just going in and out of the market.
Fascinating. Boy, you know your stuff. I'm impressed. Even though you sound like that girl. What was her name? Stevenson.
Cynthia Stevenson. I got to look her up when I get home tonight.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned a 2020 plan, I think you said.
2010. Well, these are target date funds, yeah. Meaning they're being managed by outside investment managers so that you are putting your money into the fund that best corresponds with the year in which you are actually going to retire. And so what they're doing is they're managing that fund so that as they get closer and closer to that target date, the asset allocation in that fund is changing to the point where it becomes more conservative, because the goal is then to conserve the principal because they know you're going to be needing that money to take it out.
Now, this is how my mind works, Mitch. When she said 2020 fund, I was thinking of KXXT 1010 fun, but not with a D. 1010 means fun. What
there
do you
go.
Say? All right, you like my coffee joke better. Okay.
Good job.
Well, anyway, when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion with Susan Hayek, a pension consultant. This is The Bottom Line with Mitch Spean. Very interesting things. I think it's valuable people really take note of these concepts, these issues. Very important, especially with the craziness in Washington, with the debt ceiling. Who knows if Social Security will be around in years to come. And we'll be right back.
Weidenauer, Hynten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Weidenauer, Hynten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is The Bottom Line with Mitch Spean. And when I say The Bottom Line, you better take it seriously. Because, right, Mitch, people focus on very strange things in business. And they don't usually focus on the bottom line. They're focusing on, for example, they'll do, you know,
sales.
Yeah, just I need more money, you know, rather than how about your cost structure? What would be a proper cost structure or the efficiency within the organization? And they don't focus on that usually.
There's a lot of things that go on when you're looking at a company, and it's the ownership and the management has to be handled in such a way that they're not just looking at how much money am I making, the net. They've got to look at into the future, make sure that they understand where things are going, because short-term versus long-term thinking is critical to make having success, which is exactly what we're talking with pensions too, because it's do I need the money now or should I, or how much can I put away so that I'll have it later? I mean, it's the same thing.
And there's no doubt about it, and one day we'll have a show devoted just to talking about the components of the bottom line, and I think it will shock people that people don't even realize that. And a big one, of course, consistent with breakthrough thinking, is the mindset. How does that affect the bottom line? It has a tremendous impact. People don't think about it. They think, let's just get up and go and hurry up and get more sales and solve problems. No.
It's kind of like what I've told you about the
totally
what does CPA stand for?
Cleaning, pressing, and alteration.
That's a good choice, but I'd prefer creative, proactive advisor.
I love that. Where'd you learn that? That's what I want to know.
Okay, that patent was that. Get it down there, patent it.
Yeah.
I don't know if that can be patented.
Could be a new designation.
Yeah. I love that.
But the point is we're not just accountants, we're advisors.
Yeah.
We handle a lot more than just the numbers. And so by doing this and having the creative part, because you got to look at things in a more creative manner. That's not to say that you're going to take the tax laws and be creative about how you're going to do it, because whatever the tax law says, you've got to go with. But it means that you can take a look at it from many different perspectives and make sure that it's the most advantageous to the client.
Well, there's no question about it, and I'll throw one thing else out that, and then we'll get back to Susan, is how about this, is to analyze the psychological patterns that create the numbers. And that's a very interesting concept called strategic integration. Look at my website. Okay, I'm doing a plug here. AcceleratedMastery.com. Check that out. Accelerated with an A. AcceleratedMastery.com. Look under strategic integration, a new way of really improving your business. So, Susan, we're back.
Yes.
You were wondering what Mitch and I were doing. We're talking about the bottom line. And now I have a quick question. How does someone get to know so much like you have?
You mean in the retirement industry?
Yes.
Well, there are organizations out there. Actually, there's two national organizations. I personally belong to one of them, the American Society of Pension Professionals and Actuaries, that offer credentialing programs for professionals that work either on the investment side, the administrative side, or even the record-keeping side of this particular business. I do personally hold a qualified 401k administrative designation, which means I would be qualified to run your 401k plan, in a sense, through ASPA, which is the American Society of Pension Professionals and Actuaries. And if you notice, the very last thing I said was actuaries. And I know we've kind of circled around about this, but if you are considering setting up a defined benefit plan or a cash balance plan or pairing that with an existing profit-sharing plan or 401k plan that you have as a sole proprietor or even as a business owner, you definitely want to engage an actuary. And here in the Phoenix area, there are several actuaries that are credentialed through, they're enrolled actuaries through the IRS, but they also belong to the American Society of Pension Professionals and Actuaries as well. And you can go to their website and look them up.
Fantastic. And, well, you know, I'm curious, as I'm hearing you discuss these very complex matters and subjects, what's your passion? How did you have a passion for this? Because, right, Mitch? I mean, she's a beautiful woman, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, thank you.
I knew you'd agree with that. And you're intelligent, and you're cool and have great composure.
Thanks to your fan.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the fan is on. You mean my fans out there or my fan that will blow air, cool air?
All of it.
Okay.
All of it.
So how do, I mean, you know, I don't know what a typical pension consultant looks like, but how did you become, and I mean, the passion, do you have a passion? You must have a passion for this.
I do. I find it very interesting. It actually runs the gamut from a complete broad spectrum. You're dealing with investments, which I find interesting. You're also dealing a little bit with legal topics and legal advices. This is, you know, this is tax code oriented. So you've got the Internal Revenue Code, the laws that abide, and then also some DOL regulations as well that govern these type of plans. And what else is really interesting about it is it's constantly changing. It's never stagnant. It's never boring. These laws about these plans, I mean, the deduction limits alone change every single year based upon what's going on in the marketplace, the cost of living, and things like that. Also, I would have to say probably the last component would be, I mean, you truly, really are helping people. You know, the days I have older parents who both worked for large corporations who had defined benefit plans. They both have pensions. And that just really doesn't exist in the private sector anymore from the standpoint of when you go to work for a company, you've got a defined benefit plan. Most everyone has some type of a 401k component. Or they don't have a plan at all, and they're relying on IRA savings. And you mentioned a little earlier in the show about Social Security being around or not being around. And I have a younger brother, and I remember when he was in college, I said, don't count on it, Ed, because the way things are going, you might get a benefit, but from a tax perspective or what they do with it, it might not be a whole lot of money for you. So, you know, the only person you can really count on is saving money for yourself.
Yeah, that's a good point, especially with the craziness that's going on in Washington, right, Mitch?
And you know that the when you're talking about the Internal Revenue Code, what I like to call the accountant's guide to full employment. Because of exactly what Susan said, the fact that it's constantly changing, you know, that's something that's just, it's going to be there. I can't see, although simplification would be nice, I don't see it happening. So we've got to be always on top of things. And it makes it for a challenge all the time. And it's what really makes things interesting.
Is that what got both of you into the CPA world?
Oh, the Full Employment Act?
Yes.
Mitch, you go first on that one. Nice question. I like this. You want to be a co-host?
Do I want to be a co-host?
Yeah, this is good. You're
sure.
Very good. You're very good. Okay, you heard it live.
I'm more than happy to.
Very nicely done.
Well, actually, the reason I migrated towards accounting was because of scholarship money.
Oh.
So it was dollar driven, because I originally, when I went to college, started out as an economics major. And they said, if you're going to get scholarships, you've got to go into something that's going to pay. And they said, how about accounting? And they said, okay. I mean, it was
when
still,
you say they, who's they?
It was actually the state of California.
Oh.
Aha.
Because that's where I got the scholarship, was the state of California.
It was Arnold.
No, it was a little bit before Arnold.
Oh, it was his housekeeper.
Okay.
Okay, well, when you're done, I have an opposite story for you. I started off as an accounting major because I had a scholarship.
Oh.
to go to what was then called Northeast Missouri State University. It was very highly ranked as far as a school for CPA passage, the whole bit. And I went up there my freshman year and had a scholarship and took accounting 1 and 2, and my advisor said, I just don't see you as an accountant.
Oh, you're kidding.
So he got me a summer internship. And I came back after that summer of sitting in an office by myself auditing. I said, I don't think I can do this. So I switched, and I became a finance and economics major.
Well, I've got the finance also, so.
Wow.
Interesting. Total opposites.
Yeah.
You're total opposites. But you have the same type of thinking.
Now, what about you?
I knew she would ask that.
I want your story.
All right, here's my story.
The whole story.
And I'm on the air. And I'm sticking to it. Okay.
I don't know if we have enough time.
I don't know if we're allowed to. Believe me, you don't want to hear this.
Yeah, you don't want to hear this. All right, here it is. This is really interesting. Okay, maybe not that interesting. So this girl came in and said, if I was married to you, I would put poison in your coffee. I said, if I was married, I would drink it. Okay, that we've already gone through that. I was a sociology major. Yes, sociology. I love dealing with people.
NLP comes in. I can see that right
now.
Yeah,
I did like that. However, my last year, senior year in college, they brought all the sociology majors in and said, if you're a sociology major, congratulations, there's good news and bad news. We said, what's the good news? Well, it's a great major. You can learn a lot about people. What's the bad news? There's absolutely no jobs out there. None. You shameful people, why did you ever do this? Not really. I added that part. So I filled up all my electives my last year with accounting and business and economics, and I went on to actually almost get an accounting degree. But as you know, Mitch, you can sit for the CPA exam if you – I don't know about now, but back then, if you had a degree and you had, like, you know, millions of credits in accounting,
there were not enough. There were certain credits and so and a degree, and that was pretty much it.
Yeah, so – and basically, I'm just two, you know, management courses away from a second degree. But I said, well, why? You know, I passed the CPA exam and had as much or more accounting classes than most of the people that majored in it. So that was it. Now, why the motivation? Well, you know, part of it because the practical aspect of it, accounting has been a full employment act regardless. I mean, maybe the IRS has a lot to do with it. And then, but I also used it to redefine what an accountant is. Most people, if I asked you typically, mm-hmm. what's your perception of an accountant, you would say?
Very numbers oriented, yes. Probably not very social.
Right.
And for lack of a better term, boring.
Yes, there we go. Thank you. That's exactly it. And so I redefined it and... to mean something else, which distinguishes yourself from other CPAs, so it's really easy to relate to other people, and that means maybe helping more clients, getting more clients, and that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. So I integrated neuro-linguistic programming into it. I love the consulting part. That was a good question. Thank you.
But you know what's interesting about that is I've been reading an awful lot. They say that going into the financial services industry in any way, shape, or form, CPA, financial advisor, CFP, et cetera, they're telling people if you had a sociology or psychology degree that you're better off than having a business or a finance degree.
Really?
Yeah, because you know people. Because you're able to relate to the people, and it's all about relationships.
It really is. It's the technical people. And in fact, Mitch, you might remember this years ago, 10, 15, probably 20 years ago. In the old days with CPA firms, the technical people became partners. But about 20 years ago, they decided, no, it's the people that have to become partners. We can always buy the technical. And there was a dramatic shift. And I think the firm I worked at was one of the first that recognized that, Kenneth Leventhal and Company. They merged with Ernst & Young. And when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion with Susan Hayek, a pension consultant, and, of course, Mitch Bean. The bottom line, that was a great question. Thank you.
You're welcome. That was
very good, Susan. We'll be right back.
I'm Paul, and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim, and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
And online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism.
What does your landscaping say about you?
I'm friendly to our planet.
I xeriscape.
I'm water smart.
I harvest rainwater from my landscape and garden.
I'm a free thinker.
My landscape is filled with flowers year-round.
I'm energy conscious.
I water wisely.
Clemente Design Landscape represents your vision with an understanding of what a well-designed and cost-effective landscape can do for you. Call us for a free one-hour consultation and evaluation at 602-540-3773. That's 602-540-3773. Or visit the website ClementeDesignIsGreen.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is The Bottom Line, starring Mitch Spien. Mitch, do you like how I said that? Starring Mitch Spien. I want your autograph.
As long as it's the name is right and it's pronounced right, we're in good shape.
Hey, there we go. That's good. But I want your autograph regardless.
I know. You want it on the bottom of a check.
Oh, okay. I never thought of that, but I like it already.
Can I have one?
Yeah. We both want one. We want to go to Vegas.
I love Vegas.
Me too. Vegas. What do you like about Vegas? Here, I'm going to predict what you like. I don't know you that well. However, I'm going to predict you probably like the things I like. Or maybe I'm wrong, but Mitch probably knows. I like the lights and the shows because I really don't drink or I'm not a big fan of gambling. I don't smoke. But the activity, the energy. What do you like? Uh-oh, it might be totally different.
The restaurants.
Yeah, I love the restaurants.
And the price of the food.
And I like the shows, actually.
Yeah.
I find it, I mean, it's the capital of entertainment. You can go there and pretty much get anything that you want from an entertainment venue perspective. But the restaurants are phenomenal. The spas, just the different venues. Just going from one hotel to the next,
they're
all
cool.
So different. Yeah, it's interesting.
And the
people watching.
I love the people watching.
Yes.
Visiting family.
Yeah, that's right.
There you go. Family. That's true.
So what is your, and then we'll get right back into it, what's your favorite show out there?
Cirque
du Soleil type stuff?
I love Cirque du Soleil. I think it's good. But recently I was there not quite a year ago, and I was at the Venetian, and we went over to the Palazzo and saw Jersey Boys.
Oh.
I love musicals.
I've heard that. They're very good.
Phenomenal production.
How about the Phantom of the Opera?
I've seen it several times, but I've never seen it. I've never seen the Vegas production. I've seen it in across the United States, and it is. I've seen it at the Jackie Gleason, which is a modern theater, and I've seen it at old theaters, and the old theaters are definitely better.
Well, I saw it there, and it was pretty good. If you guess my favorite show, an all-expense-paid vacation in Vegas, Mitch will pay. Okay, so what is my favorite show? You'll never guess it because I know Kurt will.
Okay, when you say a favorite show, is it a show that is constant?
Yeah, constant.
Okay.
Now she's excited.
Okay, it's going to either be the Blue Man Group or Penn & Teller.
Oh, I'm so sorry. That is not the answer. Let's give you another chance to go to Vegas.
Okay.
It's on the Strip.
Yes, it is.
The show is on the Strip.
Yeah. If you know your shows, then you're going to be able to figure that out.
And that's not a tease. You get it? Okay. I thought it was funny.
Okay.
All right, the listeners are...
Is it a Cirque du Soleil show?
No. But they are good.
But you know what?
It's on the Strip.
There's a lot of shows.
There are a lot of shows.
All right. I will
think of a lot of children.
Sorry, here it is.
A lot of children.
Donnie and Marie.
You like Donnie and Marie?
But they were so great, so talented. I loved it. She's laughing at me.
No, I would
turn in
totally,
your man card.
No, it's with you, not at
oh,
you.
Yeah.
I would totally agree. You know, I have actually thought about going, but the last two times I've been in Vegas, my friends would not go with me.
Oh, that's too bad because it is
it's
fantastic.
It's like Barry Manilow. I think he would put on a very good show, but
he
I can't
does.
Get anybody to go.
He does.
Oh,
he does.
Oh, incredible.
It's a phenomenal show.
I have some contacts. Let me know and I'll pitch in. Okay, let's get back to Susan Hayek,
yes.
A pension consultant. Here we are. We're going to talk about, for our last about 8 minutes of the show, how you set them up, parameters, time frames of deductions, what you can deduct, because people want to know that.
Well, exactly. And depending upon the kind of plan that you're going to set up is going to depend upon when you have to set it up by in any given year in order to get a deduction for that year. And then there are limits. Every plan, I mean, typical parameters are such that usually the deduction limit is around 25% of eligible compensation. And a good rule of thumb is, depending upon what type of a structure you're set up as, a sole prop, a C-corp, an S-corp, or whatever, that's usually whatever you're claiming as W-2 income, which, as a CPA, you guys know that, you know, W-2 and distributions and things like that, that's all the tax advisor. But usually it's about 25%, but there are limits. You can only take your first $245,000 of compensation into consideration. So if you've got somebody who really has hit it big and is making a lot of money, what happens is only that first $245,000 can be taken into consideration for a deductibility perspective. And there are limits. In a defined contribution plan, you can't put in more than $49,000 right now based upon the Internal Revenue Code limits. In a defined benefit plan, and that's what makes them so popular with some people, is it's higher than that. The limit, there kind of isn't a limit because it's based upon when you're going to retire and how much money I'm trying to fund for a certain point in the future. So if I'm close to retirement, that's usually very popular with older employees that haven't saved a whole lot, that are making a lot of money, and I'll use a doctor as an example. Maybe he spent all of his money in his earlier years building his practice, and now he's in his 50s and he wants to retire in 5 years. So he's got to build a retirement plan so he can retire in 5 years. And so the deductibility is a little bit different in that respect.
Well, that totally makes sense. Do you also get involved with the tax returns of the 5,500?
Actually, a third-party administrator of the plan. And on a defined benefit plan, an actuary does have to sign off on the Schedule B, but you'd always want to actually consult a pension consulting firm or a third-party administrative firm. Like I said, there's several of them here in the Valley, Cobalt Pension Group, Matthews Gold Kennedy Snow. I know Mitch knows Steve personally.
So do I. Talked to him today. Steve Matthews. Great guy.
Yeah.
And you know Steve?
I have met him before. I know Lynn Young. She's an actuary with Cobalt Pension Group, and I know a couple other actuaries here in the Valley. And then there's a company, Edberg & Associates. I know the owner of that company as well. So there's a lot of very good – I mean, Phoenix is very lucky in that respect. They've got an awful lot of very qualified individuals here in town that can help set up plans.
Yeah, I'll vouch for Steve. I like them a lot, actually, Steve Matthews. And how about a solo 401k? Is that still out there?
Absolutely. A lot of people, a lot of individual K plans are set up every single year. And since you brought up 401k plans, I think this is very good to talk about that. Let's say someone out there has thought about putting in a plan, and they've got employees, and they're thinking about setting up a safe harbor plan, which allows them to actually qualify the plan so that we don't have to worry so much about non-discrimination rules. You know, the IRS is very, very responsible from the standpoint of they don't want you to discriminate as an owner of a plan. You know, they don't want you to put in a lot more money than maybe some of your rank-and-file employees, so they do these discrimination tests. In a safe harbor plan, you don't have to do those tests because you're committing to making a certain level of contribution for the employees in the plan. Those plans in a calendar year environment have to be set up by October 1st of any given year in order for it to qualify for you to take those deductions in that given year and make contributions to the plan. So if someone were thinking about setting up a safe harbor 401k plan, you'd want to do it before the end of September, which is, that's not that far away. It's less than 60 days.
Well, the other thing about doing it at this point in the year is it gives you a few months to put money into it rather than worrying about how much do I have to put into it immediately and doing it all at once. So it gives you some time at this point by setting it up earlier rather than later.
Absolutely. Now, if you're just setting up a profit-sharing plan or you're looking at a defined benefit plan, you do have to set up those plans by the last day of your plan year. In a calendar year environment, they'd have to be set up and ready to go by 12/31. However, you don't have to fund those plans until the tax filing deadline, including extensions of your corporation.
Makes sense. Now, I did have a question from a client. We have 5 minutes. They have a solo 401k plan. Mm-hmm. They hired someone. What happens? Do they just stop funding the plan? Or because you can't have an employee, evidently, with a solo 401k. You have to switch over to a different plan, I suspect.
Well, it depends. A solo 401k is, and there again, I don't know all of the details, but what I'm assuming is he got some kind of a break from whoever the vendor is that set up the individual 401k plan that only covers him or a spouse.
Correct.
And then usually what will happen is as you add employees, they have to become eligible in the plan. There has to be eligibility requirements. Even in a solo 401k, you've got eligibility requirements for yourself.
Yeah.
So what happens is he would want to check with whoever he has the plan with, and I'm going to assume that's on the vendor level, which is the investment level, to find out how he would go ahead and add the new employee to the plan so that what happens then, it's not a solo 401k plan anymore. It's not an individual. It just becomes a regular 401k plan.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, that's very good. There's probably like tons of questions out there, and let's give you get some contact information. We have 4 minutes left, but let's get the contact information out from you, and then we'll talk a little bit more if we have time.
Okay, well, if anybody has any questions, I mean, I'm more than happy to answer questions or refer you to anyone else in the Valley, depending upon what your needs are, and you can contact me at area code 602-343-6262. And just, again, as we mentioned a little bit earlier, I am securities licensed through Resource Horizons Group, a member of FINRA and SIPC in Marietta, Georgia.
Wow. In Georgia.
Yes.
You don't have a southern accent, do
no,
you?
No, I don't.
So that's, here, give it one more time, your phone number, just in case.
Okay, just in case. Question, 602-343-6262.
That's a nice number. How about you, Mitch? How do they get in touch with you?
Oh, they can get a hold of me at mitch@jfbpc.com. John, Frank, Boy, Paul, Charlie.
What are you, a military guy?
For some reason, those letters just don't seem to work well if you just say them.
I know.
Them.
I've never heard you say that. Do that again. I like that.
Mitch@jfbpc. John, yeah. Frank, Boy, Paul, Charlie. Or they can call me at 602-266-5633.
That was a close one.
Yeah, see, I had the advantage. I had my card in front of me.
Yeah, where'd you get your card?
Well, you see,
I handed it back to you. Yeah. I love your card, though.
You can
it's
have it,
card.
Though. That's for you.
I'm going to take this. Do you have a card, Mitch? I mean, oh, from Susan. I have your card.
You're on speed dial, and so is the office, so that's why.
But is Susan on speed dial?
Not yet, but I do know what the letters that match it, so it makes it an easy number to remember.
Okay, so in summary, I guess we would have about 2 minutes left. Oh, wow, I'm pretty good at this, Kurt. 2 minutes.
You certainly
That was
are.
Like the peace sign. You know, Kurt gave me the 2 minutes. It's like the peace.
Peace, baby, peace.
So in summary, it sounds like it's technical enough. People should talk to someone like yourself, a consultant in pensions, and learn about how to set them up. Learn about the best structure. Learn about the tax benefits, and it really pays off very nicely. And we didn't even get into the investment options. That's another topic for another day.
Absolutely.
But that's very critical too, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, talk to your investment advisor or your investment consultant or your CPA about whether or not it makes sense for you to set up a plan like this from a deductibility perspective. But again, I highly encourage to secure someone who is knowledgeable in this particular area. But as both of you would attest, you're like, hey, I'm more than happy to have a TPA working with my clients and setting up these plans and making them work.
Well, information is key. I mean, for anybody. So anybody that needs it, they just got to go out and find those resources. And Susan being one that is on the top of my list.
And mine too. Very, very good. And, of course, the best salespeople for establishing a pension right now is Washington politicians, because they don't know what they're doing. It is unbelievable. However, now we're at the end of the show, so I can't give my commentary. Susan Hayek, thank you so much for being in studio today.
Thank you for having me. Both of you, thank you.
Oh, absolutely. Mitch
Spean. Looking forward to having you back soon.
Thank
absolutely. You. Mitch Spean, at the bottom line, it's always nice seeing you. So we'll have another episode of The Bottom Line next month. Oh, even sooner. We have
possibly sooner.
August 30th, 31st, the special events.
That's right.
I believe. And stay tuned for the Green Roundtable coming right up at 3 o'clock.
You have found Arizona Station, 1010 KXXT, Tolleson, Phoenix.